Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier. He is joined in the studio by the show's producer, Casey Capshaw.
Have you ever considered that the reason why you never achieve your goals is because you don't really care? Is your life filled with stuff you don't want? And how do you know when it's time to move on from a job, relationship, or even the town you're living in? This week, we begin our discussion with Steve Pavlina, writer of the web's most popular personal development blog. Listen as we talk about how living a safe life is the same as living in a locked box. Welcome to The New Man. Today I have Steve Pavlina on the show. He just finished a book called Personal Development for Smart People, and he also has the most popular personal development website on the planet. Steve, it's an honor to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Thanks so much, Triff. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so I've been poking around your book, and I'm amazed at the story about how you got into personal development. It's a bit of a, I'll let you tell. How did you get into personal development?
Well, it started when I was 19 years old. I got on a really bad track in life, and I started shoplifting a lot. I was shoplifting all the time and got so addicted to it, the adrenaline rush of it. I wasn't even stealing because I wanted the stuff I was stealing. I just did it for the thrill of it.
Wow.
And I had to keep escalating it more and more. It became an addiction for me. It was like my drug.
Wow.
I would just go out and steal, and that was like my daily espresso in the morning. a little thrill. And it was pretty sick time for me. I was 19 years old. And I got into a lot of trouble. I got arrested, did community service, kept going, got arrested, did more community service, kept going. And eventually I got arrested for felony grand theft. And I'm sitting in jail for a few days, and I realize that I'm really screwing up badly here and that I really need to change the direction of my life. The problem was I was so entrenched in what I was doing and so entrenched in this addiction. It was filling so many needs for me and filling in a void in my life that it was very difficult for me to let go of it.
Huh.
And I honestly didn't know that I could do that. And I realized that at the time I wasn't the kind of man who could solve all the problems he was facing, but I had the idea that maybe I could grow into the type of man who could solve those problems.
So did you have a clear vision of the guy that you wanted to be at that time?
Not exactly. But for me at the time, it was a path away from pain. I was having so much pain in my life, I realized I can't keep being the same person I am now. I can't keep on this track. It's going to lead to total self-destruction. I'm going to end up in prison.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have a clear vision of where to go, but I knew I needed to leave where I was.
Now, that's an understatement, because there's been lots of guys that have gotten their ass landed in jail, but something really clicked in there for you, because personal development became so much more than just something to get away from pain. Is that correct?
Yeah, over time, that's how it was. I mean, initially, my goal was just, I want to live a normal life. I want to be like everyone else. And I really just tried to stay below the radar. After I got over that experience, I tried to live a very plain, vanilla existence. I got a minimum wage job and really just tried to stay off the radar.
Yeah.
I tried to just keep from, it was all about staying out of trouble. That was like my main focus.
All right.
Don't get in trouble. And I wasn't doing anything ambitious, but later in life, that's when I started thinking, well, you know, I've recovered enough that maybe now I should start thinking about what I want to do with my life. And that's where I really started thinking about setting goals.
Okay. And tell me more about setting goals, because some people, you know, have the different takes, but it seems like goal setting was huge for you. Tell me more about that.
It was huge. And I know I have a different take on goal setting than most people in this field talk about. A lot of people talk about setting SMART goals, goals that are specific, measurable, and actionable, and so on. And, you know, getting very specific, and you have this certain structured process for how to set a goal and how to determine if the goal is good and whether it's realistic and you can get it done in a certain period of time. It's very methodical, but it really didn't prove effective for me to try to set goals like that. It's like treating a human as if he's a computer program running some sort of algorithm. Like if you just define this goal in writing, then you're automatically going to achieve it. But I found I had all kinds of written goals that I never achieved, and it seemed like I wanted them, but I just never got my ass in motion to do anything about it. So what worked for me is I just scrapped that old process of setting goals, and I realized, I looked at my life and I thought, what goals did I set that I actually achieved? And I started to see a pattern there. And then comparing that with goals I set that I didn't achieve, or that I just lost sight of or got distracted from. And the difference was that the goals I achieved were not necessarily SMART goals, in the sense that they weren't always specific, they weren't always measurable. Sometimes they were really vague goals, very general, hard to define, something other goal-setting people might trash completely. But what they did for me is that in the moment I thought about them, they inspired me. And they drove me to action just when I thought about them. The more I thought about those goals, the better I felt.
Uh-huh.
So when I set a new goal, if it doesn't change the way I feel right now, in the moment I think about it, not like a year from now in the future when I've achieved it, but in the immediate moment when I set it, if I don't get that feeling, I know it's a bad goal, and I know not even to bother with it.
And so you're actually talking about, like, it's in your body. It's like you say these words, like, I'm going to do X, Y, or Z, and it fires you up, or what's the actual quality of that feeling so the guy at home can get that?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll just give you a quick example so you can see how it worked. One of the goals I set, which was really inspiring to me, is what – even before I started my personal development website in 2004, when I was just beginning with it, I set a goal. And my goal was to create the best personal development website in the world. And that's a pretty vague goal. I had no timeline for it. I had no idea what best really meant. I had, you know, only a vague sense of how to do that. I'd never done anything like that before.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even know what the competition was, what other websites were out there.
Mm.
So I couldn't even say what specific features it would have to have. However, despite how bad that goal might seem at first glance, when I thought about it, I got totally inspired. I thought, this is such an awesome goal. I have to do this. I was totally turned on.
Mm.
And articles would just pour out of me. And I just would work long hours to do it. And the time would just fly by. And I was having a great time. I was having fun. I was connecting with people. I was helping people. The goal was just something that totally turned me on.
Wow.
And the more I thought about it, the more inspired I did. And I got, and the more work I did. And the funny thing is that somewhere along the line, I think I achieved that goal. I mean, it's obviously a very subjective thing.
Yeah.
But I really do feel that, according to my own values and ideals, that I have the best personal development website on the internet. And other people have agreed. Now, I don't expect everyone to. I don't need everyone to. The point is not that I've achieved that goal in some objective sense, that, you know, comparing myself to other people, I just don't do that. The point was that was a goal that inspired me and drove me to action, and that it created a result.
You know, and the other part that I'm getting is that a lot of guys, especially, you know, it's New Year's resolution time or something, and it's like, I should do this or I should do that. So that becomes the goal. But if I actually take on that goal, I'm not inspired. I'm actually feel weakened or whatever. But it sounds like a good idea. It sounds noble. But you're saying if it doesn't inspire you, if it doesn't fire you up, then don't do it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, partly this is a process of self-discovery, of figuring out which goals really fire you up and which really don't. And we fall in this pattern of adopting socially conditioned goals, goals we think we're supposed to set, and then when we set them and we start working on them, we realize deep down we just don't care. A good example is, for many years I set a goal in running my business that I wanted to become a millionaire. I thought that would be a really cool goal. I want to have a net worth of $1 million or more. And I worked on that goal. I thought, you know, at least I thought I was working on it. But for some reason, I always got distracted from it, because deep down, And it took me years to admit this to myself, but deep down, I really did not care about being a millionaire. It just did not matter to me. And I realized that having $1 million or not having $1 million was not going to make that much difference in my life, not given the lifestyle I live, because I'm just not that materialistic a person. And I just absolutely abandoned that goal. I thought, I don't even need this. And when I finally let go of it and I started setting more inspiring goals, my wealth went up. But I wasn't really trying to do that. So it's sort of funny that I got some of the results of that goal without actually focusing on it directly.
Interesting. Let me ask you this, because I deal with guys, I coach guys, and I also run into a lot of guys in men's groups and stuff, and they've kind of hit that wall. There's just no inspiration. There's no motivation. They're kind of flat. Things haven't been going right or whatever. But how do you tease out that? Can you go more into how you tease out that motivation, how you find that feeling?
Yeah, one of the things you can do is you want to focus on connecting with what you want in your life. And the challenge there is that you also have to disconnect from what you don't want. A big trap a lot of people get into, men and women alike, is that they find themselves at a point where their life is filled with things they don't really want, things they don't feel connected to, things that don't inspire them. For example, they're living in a city that they really don't like, or they've got a job that they don't feel fulfilled by, or they're in a relationship where they feel stuck. And a really tricky thing that's almost counterintuitive is that if you want to bring more of what you want into your life, you also have to let go of what you don't want, and you have to do that very consciously. So in other words, you have to break off the relationships that's not working. You have to quit the job that isn't fulfilling. Leave the city that you don't like and go live somewhere else. And if you don't shed the things that you don't want to have in your life, you don't have the space really to attract what you do want.
We'll return to the discussion in just a minute. Participate on a live call where I will be interviewed by revolutionary man Jason Gaddis on February 19th at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Go to www.revolutionaryman.com to sign up for this free call, and I'll answer your questions live on a ton of topics. If you can't make the call, you can download it the next day. I look forward to speaking with you. Now, back to the discussion.
If you don't shed the things that you don't want to have in your life, you don't have the space, really, to attract what you do want.
Wow. I'm just imagining the guy out there that maybe he's even in like in a tough relationship, or he's in that crappy job, and it's such a lousy job market out there. He's listening going, what in the hell? Are you serious? I'm going to leave what I already have behind. I'd rather have this than nothing. But you're saying if we're willing to really have this greatness or what we really want in our life, we have to be willing to actually own that we don't want what's already there and actually leave it behind. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. As Stephen Covey says, go for win-win or no deal. That's the way I think. Too many guys think that compromise is the right solution, that it's better to have a little bit of what I want mixed with a little bit of what I don't want than to risk getting nothing for the chance of having everything I want in my life.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's total nonsense to live that way. I really found that's true. In my own life, I would rather be homeless than work at a job I don't enjoy.
Do you have any personal kind of anecdotes about where you had to, like, a lot of guys call this like burning the boats, like we're going to sail over there and have this battle and we're going to burn the boat so there's no coming back. But is there a personal story that you have that where you had to like, okay, I'm doing this and I'm saying goodbye to the old thing and totally diving into what I want?
Yeah, I use that analogy myself a lot. I say it's burning the ships. You got to burn the ships behind you once you've landed on that new shore.
Right.
However, you don't want to burn the food and supplies. So you land with some food and supplies, but you burn the ship. So you have to make this careful distinction between what is your food and supplies that you're going to need versus what is keeping you held to that ship and giving you an escape route.
Uh-huh.
So for example, when I was running a computer game development business for 10 years, and after a while I decided it just didn't inspire me to do that anymore. It was a dream in my 20s, but when I got in my 30s, I just lost interest in it. And I wanted to switch to the field of personal development. Well, I still wanted to retain some of the income, however, from my games business, so I put it into low gear. But that was essentially sounding the death knell for that business, because I knew I was going to get out of it. And I basically told everyone, I'm retiring from this field. I'm quitting. I'm going to be shutting down my business, my games business, you know, pretty soon. And I started up my personal development website. For me, that was enough of a commitment. That was burning the ships behind me. I told everyone I'm going this direction. I used to run a popular discussion forum for independent game developers, and I just gave that away. I gave it to some other people to own and operate.
Wow.
So there were a lot of things, steps I took. I took my business down to such a low gear that I was making maybe about a quarter as much money as I was making before. Mm. It was enough to sustain me, but it wasn't really creating, you know, a path of abundance.
Right.
But that was what I needed to move forward. Had I shut down the business completely, immediately, that would have been unnecessary for me. I mean, you need to take it far enough that you're committed and then you're not going to look back. And I never looked back. I always kept moving forward, so I knew I'd had that commitment.
Mm.
And you know, if you have to quit your job to move forward, and a lot of people do, that because that job is not just their food and supplies, that is the ship that's keeping them in the wrong harbor.
Yeah.
In my case, you know, putting my games business in low gear was good enough, and that worked. For other people, you know, your situation is always different. You have to decide what is your ship and what is your food and supplies.
I want to ask you about, you know, my grandfather's generation, maybe some of my father's generation. There was an idea that you picked a career and you did that for life. And I think we inherit an ability to not question our choice or a choice we made years ago. And so what was your process like when you realized, because this sounds like a really kick-ass career, owning a game company and that kind of thing. Did you wake up one morning and be like, shit, this just doesn't inspire me anymore? And was there terror for you? Was it like, I'm stuck here? Or can you describe that process of like turning the corner and being a yes to the fact that you wanted to move on?
You know, I wish it was a corner. It was more of a long, slow curve because it was more of a gradual malaise that developed over time. It was definitely a business that I was inspired to run. I didn't get into it for the wrong reasons. I loved doing it. I started it, I think, when I was 22, 23 years old, and I loved it. I loved working in the field. But eventually, I reached the point of saturation where I felt I'd developed many of the games I wanted to do, and I started publishing other people's games, and it started to become more of a grind, and I lost that passion for it.
Mm.
But the way I recognize that is that I found myself being more passionate about other things than my career, than my work. In fact, what would happen is I would make excuses to go to extra personal development seminars or read personal development books on the side, listen to audio programs. That I love doing. And I notice I'm spending less time doing personal development on the side, and I'm spending less and less time working on my games business because it just didn't inspire me. Whenever I looked at my games goals, my business goals for the games business, I would think, ugh, this is going to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
I started thinking about my personal development goals. I thought about how cool it would be to work on those things.
Mm.
You know, oh, cool, this will be an awesome thing to do. And it took, you know, it took me honestly years to really realize what was happening because
wow.
I'd never been through that process before. That was really my first career running the games business. I started it right out of college.
Sounds like there's a fork in the road where some guys just kind of start to mute their feelings around that. They start to like just accept the fact that the job sucks, right? I'm just hanging in there. But you made a choice to go down the other road, which is towards inspiration. I don't know. There's a part of me that just wants to shake the hell out of some guys and be like, dude, where's that inspired life for you? What does that look like for you? Is there a way to do that or help me out there?
Yeah, I have a similar feeling sometimes. I tell people, if I could just rip my heart out of my chest and stick it into your chest, you would have such an awesome life.
We just don't need to illustrate that.
Yeah, it's, you know, and by heart, I really mean courage. And, and you know, the word heart, you know, is really the core of the word courage, cur, or the Latin core, or the French care, which means heart. Mm. And, you know, that's the root of the word courage, is heart. So one of the things I ask myself, and this I advise anyone to do, is you ask yourself, does this path have a heart? And that's really a quote from Carlos Castaneda. And he says, if you find the path you're on does not have a heart, you need to get off of it because that path is going to kill you.
Let's dive in there. So let's really suss that out. What does that mean? Does the path have a heart? Like, how would I know if my path has heart or not?
For one, you feel it in your chest. It excites you. It causes an emotional reaction. It excites you, but at the same time, it scares you. You'll have this feeling like, wow, that would be an awesome goal to achieve, or that would be an awesome life to live. But honestly, I really don't know if I could pull that off.
Hmm.
And you have this sort of this mixed association, like, wow, that'd be great to do it, but you know what? I don't know if I'm up to that. I don't know if I could actually do that. Mm-hmm. Those are the goals that really inspire me. When I look at a goal and I go, yeah, I could do that. That's kind of an easy one. It's a done deal. There's no heart there. There's no excitement. See, the excitement is like part inspiration and part terror. You have to be somewhat scared of the path you're on, because that's the path that's going to build your courage.
Wow. And I'm just thinking right now, there's so many guys that are playing it safe, and rightfully so. It's scary out there, but you're saying that find that edge, find that thing that really like lights you up. You actually feel it in your chest, and then, but also scares you a little bit. But if I'm scared right now, scared for my family, scared for my future, there's a part like I'm going to find the easiest path possible. How does that add up?
Well, take a look at the word safe. The word safe is both an adjective and a noun, right? As an adjective, it means being free from harm or free from danger, you know, having security. But as a noun, it's an enclosed storage container with a lock on it. Well, I tell people, if you're living the adjective, you're living the noun.
Wow.
You know, if you're going to try to live a safe and secure life, you're in a cage. Mm-hmm. You're in a lockbox. You're restricting your freedom. Mm. And if you let go of the need for security, in the sense of tying your security to something out there, something outside yourself, like I need money or I need a job or I need a certain type of relationship. If that is the basis for your security and your self-esteem, you're in a cage.
Hmm. What does it look like to then step out? Like, let's say I'm out there and I'm like, man, there's no way. I got to have X amount of money coming in a month because I got to make the bills and blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to stay with this, you know, shitball job or whatever. But what does it look like to take a step outside of that? Do you have any kind of a scenario that you could describe?
Yeah, initially it's terrifying, but at the same time, it's thrilling. You know, when I graduated from college, I had no interest in a safe and secure job. I could have gone that route. I had a degree in computer science and degree in mathematics, and I was, I was at the top of my class. I was doing great, and I had no interest. I just didn't want a job. Instead, I wanted to start my own business because I knew it would be more exciting, and I also knew that that was the path that was going to generate more growth. Mm-hmm. It would be harder. See, you don't need to avoid difficulty in life. Think of it like weight training. If you look at, say a 40-pound dumbbell, is that heavy or light? Well, the answer depends on how strong you are. Okay, some guy like Arnold Schwarzenegger will say, this is light. But some newbie guy just going to the gym for the first time who's rather weak is going to think, wow, this is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of building your courage and building the way you interface with life as a process of progressive training, just like weight training at a gym, okay, you might start with little weights, but then you can progress to bigger and bigger weights. So for me, taking risks because I built my courage to a certain degree is not as hard as it's going to be for someone who's had a safe and secure job for so many years. I mean, for somebody like that, quitting their job is a huge, huge weight to lift.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like some wimpy guy looking at a 100-pound dumbbell and he's like, that's too much for me to do a bicep curl with.
Right.
But for me, I'm just like, quit. Quit already. It's like some bodybuilder might go, lift it, curl
right.
it.
Just do
nothing.
It.
It's nothing, you know. But you have to understand that everyone's at a different strength in terms of the courage that they developed, in terms of their ability to follow that path with the heart and to tolerate a certain amount of uncertainty in their life.
And it sounds like we need to have, if this is in the applicable, in the realm of application, sounds like we need to have a vision of where we're going. It's not just like, this sucks, quit. It's more like, where do I want to be? What shore do I want to sail to? And then I'll burn the ship kind of thing. How important is that vision?
It really depends on if you're thinking of life in terms of a training mindset or a destination mindset. There's sometimes where I have goals which are really just about training. Like, I will do things just to build my courage. If I find there's something I'm afraid of and I think this is a fear I need to get over and it will make me stronger if I can overcome this fear, then I will go and do it. It's like it's a training process for me.
Hmm.
But on the other hand, there are times where now I'm not in training mode, now I'm maybe in competition mode. So now it's a performance rather than practice.
Wow.
So in that performance mode, it's now I'm thinking, okay, now I have to apply the strength I've already built.
Uh-huh.
And yes, you do get some training benefit from performing.
Mm.
But as any athlete knows, there's a big difference between the training you're going to gain from a real-world performance and the training you can gain in practice. Because in practice, you have no audience usually. You know, you can really focus on developing the skills you need. Mm-hmm. Whereas in real world situations, sometimes the experiences you get are random and they just don't expose all your weaknesses. They don't help you train up. Does that make sense? You know, think of it just like a professional athlete, like a football player.
Yeah.
What if all they did was play football and that's their training? They're not going to be a very good athlete. You know, compared to all the different scenarios they'll be able to face in practice and hitting the weight room and going through drills and so on.
Check out part two of our discussion with Steve Pavlina, where we'll talk about what to do if you're staring down the possibility of unemployment. Visit www.thenewmanpodcast.com, and thank you for listening.